own. It wasn't impossible. His great-grandfather had found it. For some reason, his great-grandfather had felt the urge to climb to the top of that mountain. Maybe Zero would feel the same urge. If it was the same mountain, if water was still there. He tried to convince himself it wasn't impossible. There had been a storm just a few days ago. Maybe Big Thumb was actually some kind of natural water tower that caught and stored the rain. It wasn't impossible. He returned to his tent to find the warden, Mr. Sir, and Mr. Pendansky all waiting for him. "Have you seen Zero?" the warden asked him. "No." "No sign of him at all?" "No." "Do you have any idea where he went?" "No."
"You know, you're not doing him any favors if you're lying," said Mr. Sir. "He can't survive out there for more than a day or two."
"I don't know where he is." All three stared at Stanley as if they were trying to figure out if he was telling the truth. Mr. Pendansky's face was so swollen he could barely open his eyes. They were just slits.
"You sure he has no family?" the warden asked Mr. Pendansky.
"He's a ward of the state," Mr. Pendansky told her. "He was living on the streets when he was arrested."
"Is there anyone who might ask questions? Some social worker who took an interest in him?"
"He had nobody," said Mr. Pendansky. "He was nobody."
The warden thought a moment.
"Okay, I want you to destroy all of his records."
Mr. Pendansky nodded.
"He was never here," said the warden.
Mr. Sir nodded.
"Can you get into the state files from our computer?"
she asked Mr. Pendansky.
"I don't want anyone in the AG's office to know he was here."
"I don't think I can erase him completely from all the state files," said Mr. Pendansky. "Too many cross-references. But I can make it so it would be very difficult for anyone to ever find a record of him. Like I said, though, no one will ever look. No one cares about Hector Zeroni."
"Good," said the warden.
Chapter 32 2 days later, a new kid was assigned to Group D. His name was Brian, but X-Ray called him Twitch because he was always fidgeting. Twitch was assigned Zero's bed and Zero's crate. Vacancies don't last long at Camp Greenlake. Twitch had been arrested for stealing a car. He claimed he could break into a car, disconnect the alarm, and hotwire the engine, all in less than a minute.
"I never planned to, you know, steal one," he told them. "But sometimes, you know, I'll just be walking past a real nice car, parked in a deserted area. And, you know, I'll just start twitching. If you think I twitch now, you should see me when I'm around a car. Next thing I know, I'm behind the wheel."
Stanley lay on his scratchy sheets. It occurred to him that his cot no longer smelled bad. He wondered if the smell had gone away, or if he had just gotten used to it.
"Hey, caveman," said Twitch. "Do we really have to get up at 4:30?
"You get used to it," Stanley told him. "It's the coolest part of the day." He tried not to think about Zero. It was too late. Either he'd made it to Big Thumb, or... What worried him the most, however, wasn't that it was too late. What worried him the most, what really ate at his insides, was the fear that it wasn't too late. What if Zero was still alive, desperately crawling across the dirt, searching for water? He tried to force the image out of his mind. The next morning, out on the lake, Stanley listened as Mr. Sir told Twitch the requirements for his hole.
"As wide and as deep as your shovel."
Twitch fidgeted. His fingers drummed against the wooden shaft of his shovel, and his neck moved from side to side.
"You won't be twitching so much after digging all day," Mr. Sir told him. "You won't have the strength to wiggle your pinky."
He popped some sunflower seeds in his mouth, deftly chewed them, and spat out the shells.
"This isn't a Girl Scout camp."
The water truck came shortly after sunrise. Stanley got in line behind Magnet, ahead of Twitch. What if it's not too late? He watched Mr. Sir fill X-Ray's canteen. The image of Zero crawling across the hot, dry dirt remained in his head. But what could he do about it? Even if Zero was somehow alive after more than 4 days, how would Stanley ever find him? It would take days. He'd need a car. Or a pickup truck. A pickup truck with a tank of water in the back. Stanley wondered if Mr. Sir had left the keys in the ignition. He slowly backed away from the line, then circled over to the side of the truck. He looked through the window. The keys were there, dangling in the ignition. Stanley felt his fingers start to twitch. He took a deep breath to steady himself and tried to think clearly. He had never driven before. But how hard could it be? "This is really crazy," he told himself.
Whatever he did, he knew he'd have to do it quickly, before Mr. Sir noticed. It's too late, he told himself. Zero couldn't have survived. But what if it wasn't too late? He took another deep breath. Think about this, he told himself. But there wasn't time to think. He flung open the door to the truck and climbed quickly inside.
Hey, shouted Mr. Sir.
He turned the key and stepped on the gas pedal. The engine revved. The truck didn't move. He pressed the pedal to the floor. The engine roared, but the truck was motionless. Mr. Sir came running around the side of the truck. The door was still open.
Put it in gear,
shouted Twitch. The gear shift was on the floor next to the seat. Stanley pulled the lever back until the arrow pointed to the letter D for drive. The truck lurched forward. Stanley jerked back against the seat and tightly gripped the wheel as the truck accelerated. His foot was pressed to the floor. The truck went faster and faster across the dry lake bed. It bounced over a pile of dirt. Suddenly, Stanley was slammed forward, then instantly backward as an airbag exploded in his face. He fell out of the open door and onto the ground. He had driven straight into a hole. He lay on the dirt staring at the truck, which stuck lopsided into the ground. He sighed. He couldn't blame his no-good, dirty, rotten, pig-stealing great-great-grandfather this time. This time it was his own fault. 100%. He had probably just done the stupidest thing he had ever done in his short and miserable life. He managed to get to his feet. He was sore, but didn't think he had broken any bones. He glanced back at Mr. Sir, who remained where he was, staring at Stanley. He ran. His canteen was strapped around his neck. It banged against his chest as he ran, and every time it hit against him, it reminded him that it was empty, empty, empty. Chapter 33. He slowed to a walk. As far as he could tell, nobody was chasing him. He could hear voices coming from back by the truck, but couldn't make out the words. Occasionally, he'd hear the revving of the engine, but the truck wasn't going anywhere anytime soon. He headed in what he thought was the direction of Big Thumb. He couldn't see it through the haze. Walking helped calm him down and allowed him to think clearly. He doubted he could make it to Big Thumb, and with no water in his canteen, he didn't want to risk his life on the hope that he'd find refuge there. He'd have to return to camp. He knew that, but he was in no hurry. It would be better to return later, after everyone had a chance to calm down. And as long as he'd come this far, he might as well look for Zero. He decided to walk as long as he could, until he was too weak to go any farther. Then he'd turn around and go back. He smiled as he realized that wouldn't quite work. He would only go halfway, halfway as far as he thought he could go, so that he'd still have the strength to return. Then he'd have to make a deal with the warden, tell her where he found Kate Barlow's lipstick tube, and beg for mercy. He was surprised by how far out the holes extended. He couldn't even see the camp compound anymore, but he still kept passing holes. Just when he thought he'd passed the last hole, he'd come across another cluster of them, a little farther away. Back at the compound, they had dug in a systematic order, row upon row, allowing space for the water truck. But out here, there was no system. It was as if every once in a while, in a fit of frustration, the warden would just pick a spot at random and say, "What the hell? Dig here." It was like trying to guess the winning numbers in a lottery. Stanley found himself looking down into each hole he passed. He didn't admit to himself what he was looking for. After more than an hour had gone by, he thought he had surely seen the last hole. But then, off to the left, he saw another cluster of them. He didn't actually see the holes. He saw the mounds of dirt that surrounded them. He stepped over the mounds and looked into the first hole. His heart stopped. Down at the bottom was a family of yellow-spotted lizards. Their large red eyes looked up at him. He leapt back over the mound and ran. He didn't know if they were chasing after him. He thought he might have seen one leap out of the hole. He ran until he couldn't run any farther, then collapsed. They hadn't come after him. He sat there a while and caught his breath. As he got back to his feet, he thought he noticed something on the ground, maybe 50 yards away. It didn't look like much, maybe just a big rock, but in a land of nothingness, any little thing seemed unusual. He walked slowly toward it. The encounter with the lizards had made him very cautious. It turned out to be an empty sack of sunflower seeds. He wondered if it was the same one Magnet had stolen from Mr. Sir, although that didn't seem likely. He turned it inside out and found one seed stuck to the burlap. Lunch. Chapter 34. The sun was almost directly overhead. He figured he could walk for no more than another hour, maybe two, before he had to turn back. It seemed pointless. He could see there was nothing ahead of him. Nothing but emptiness. He was hot, tired, hungry, and most of all, thirsty. Maybe he should just turn around now. Maybe he had already gone halfway and didn't know it. Then, looking around, he saw a pool of water less than 100 yards away from where he was standing. He closed his eyes and opened them to make sure he wasn't imagining it. The pool was still there. He hurried toward it. The pool hurried away from him, moving as he moved, stopping when he stopped. There wasn't any water. It was a mirage caused by the shimmering waves of heat rising off the dry ground. He kept walking. He still carried the empty sack of sunflower seeds. He didn't know if he might find something to put in it. After a while, he thought he could make out the shape of the mountains through the haze. At first, he wasn't sure if this was another kind of mirage, but the farther he walked, the clearer they came into view. Almost straight ahead of him, he could see what looked like a fist, with its thumb sticking up. He didn't know how far away it was. 5 miles? 50 miles? One thing was certain. It was more than halfway. He kept walking toward it, although he didn't know why. He knew he'd have to turn around before he got there. But every time he looked at it, it seemed to encourage him, giving him the thumbs-up sign. As he continued walking, he became aware of a large object on the lake. He couldn't tell what it was, or even if it was natural or man-made. It looked a little like a fallen tree, although it didn't seem likely that a tree would grow here. More likely, it was a ridge of dirt or rocks. The object, whatever it was not on the way to Big Thumb, but off to the right. He tried to decide whether to go to it or continue toward Big Thumb, or maybe just turn around. There was no point in heading towards Big Thumb, he decided. He would never make it. For all he knew, it was like chasing the moon. But he could make it to the mysterious object. He changed directions. He doubted it was anything, but the fact that there was something in the middle of all this nothing made it hard for him to pass up. He decided to make the object his halfway point, and he hoped he hadn't already gone too far. He laughed to himself when he saw what it was. It was a boat, or part of a boat, anyway. It struck him as funny to see a boat in the middle of this dry and barren wasteland. But after all, he realized, this was once a lake. The boat lay upside down, half buried in the dirt. Someone may have drowned here, he thought grimly, at the same spot where he could very well die of thirst. The name on the boat had been painted on the back. The upside-down red letters were peeled and faded, but Stanley could still read the name, Mary Lou. On one side of the boat there was a pile of dirt, and then a tunnel leading down below the boat. The tunnel looked big enough for a good-sized animal to crawl through. He heard a noise. Something stirred under the boat. It was coming out. "Hey!" Stanley shouted, hoping to scare it back inside. His mouth was very dry, and it was hard to shout very loudly.
"Hey!"
the thing answered weakly. Then a dark hand and an orange sleeve reached up out of the tunnel. Chapter 35. Zero's face looked like a jack-o'-lantern that had been left out too many days past Halloween, half-rotten, with sunken eyes and a drooping smile.
"Is that water?"
he asked. His voice was weak and raspy. His lips were so pale they were almost white, and his tongue seemed to flop around uselessly in his mouth as he spoke, as if it kept getting in the way. "It's empty," said Stanley. He stared at Zero, not quite believing that he was real. "I tried to bring you the whole water truck, but," he smiled sheepishly, "I drove it into a hole."
"I can't believe you're..." "Me neither," said Zero.
"Come on, we gotta get back to camp." Zero shook his head.
"I'm not going back."
"You have to. We both have to."
You want some sploosh?"
Zero asked.
"What?"
Zero shaded his eyes with his forearm.
"It's cooler under the boat," he said.
Stanley watched Zero crawl back through his hole. It was a miracle he was still alive, but Stanley knew he would have to get him back to camp soon, even if he had to carry him. He crawled after him, and was just able to squeeze his body through the hole. He never would have fit when he first came to Camp Green Lake. He'd lost a lot of weight. As he pulled himself through, his leg struck something sharp and hard. It was a shovel.
For a second, Stanley wondered how it got there, but then remembered that Zero had taken it with him after striking Mr. Pendansky. It was cooler under the boat, which was half buried in the dirt. There were enough cracks and holes in the bottom of the boat, now the roof, to provide light and ventilation. He could see empty jars scattered about. Zero held a jar in his hand and grunted as he tried to unscrew the lid. "What is it?"
"Sploosh!"
His voice was strained as he worked on the jar.
"That's what I call it. They were buried under the boat."
He still couldn't get the lid off.
"I found 16 jars. Here, hand me the shovel."
Stanley didn't have a lot of room to move. He reached behind him, grabbed the wooden end of the shovel, and held it out to Zero, blade first.
"Sometimes you just have to,"
Zero said. Then he hit the jar against the blade of the shovel, breaking the top of the jar clean off. He quickly brought the jar to his mouth and licked the sploosh off the jagged edges before it spilled. "Careful," Stanley warned. Zero picked up the cracked lid and licked the sploosh off that as well. Then he handed the broken jar to Stanley.
"Drink some."
Stanley held it in his hand and stared at it a moment. He was afraid of the broken glass. He was also afraid of the sploosh. It looked like mud. Whatever it was, he realized, it must have been in the boat when the boat sank. That meant it was probably over 100 years old. Who knew what kind of bacteria might be living in it?
"It's good," said Zero, encouraging him.
He wondered if Zero had heard of bacteria. He raised the jar to his mouth and carefully took a sip. It was a warm, bubbly, mushy nectar, sweet and tangy. It felt like heaven as it flowed over his dry mouth and down his parched throat. He thought it might have been some kind of fruit at some time. Perhaps peaches. Zero smiled at him.
"I told you it was good."
Stanley didn't want to drink too much, but it was too good to resist. They passed the jar back and forth until it was empty. "How many are left?" he asked.
"None," said Zero.
Stanley's mouth dropped.
"Now I have to take you back," he said.
"I'm not digging any more holes," said Zero.
"They won't make you dig," Stanley promised. "They'll probably send you to a hospital, like Barf Bag."
"Barf Bag stepped on a rattlesnake," said Zero.
Stanley remembered how he'd almost done the same. I guess he didn't hear the rattle.
"He did it on purpose," said Zero.
"You think?"
"He took off his shoe and sock first."
Stanley shivered as he tried to imagine it.
"What's Mar-ya-luo?"
asked Zero.
"What?"
Zero concentrated hard.
"Mar-ya-luo."
"I have no idea."
"I'll show you," said Zero.
He crawled back out from under the boat. Stanley followed. Back outside, he had to shield his eyes from the brightness. Zero walked around to the back of the boat and pointed to the upside-down letters.
"Mar-ya-luo,"
Stanley smiled.
"Mary Lou. It's the name of the boat."
"Mary Lou,"
Zero repeated, studying the letters.
"I thought Y made the yus sound."
"It does," said Stanley, "but not when it's at the end of a word. Sometimes Y is a vowel, and sometimes it's a consonant."
Zero suddenly groaned. He grabbed his stomach and bent over.
"Are you all right?"
Zero dropped to the ground. He lay on his side with his knees pulled up to his chest. He continued to groan. Stanley watched helplessly. He wondered if it was the sploosh. He looked back toward Camp Greenlake. At least he thought it was the direction of Camp Greenlake. He wasn't entirely sure. Zero stopped moaning, and his body slowly unbent. "I'm taking you back," said Stanley. Zero managed to sit up. He took several deep breaths. "Look, I got a plan so you won't get in trouble," Stanley assured him. "Remember when I found the gold tube? Remember? I gave it to X-Ray, and the warden went crazy making us dig where she thought X-Ray found it? I think if I tell the warden where I really found it, I think she'll let us off."
"I'm not going back," said Zero.
"You've got nowhere else to go," said Stanley.
Zero said nothing.
"You'll die out here," said Stanley.
"Then I'll die out here."
Stanley didn't know what to do. He had come to rescue Zero, and instead drank the last of his sploosh. He looked off into the distance.
"I want you to look at something."
"I'm not..."
"I just want you to look at that mountain up there. See the one that has something sticking up out of it?
Yeah, I think.
What does it look like to you? Does it look like anything?
Zero said nothing. But as he studied the mountain, his right hand slowly formed into a fist. He raised his thumb. His eyes went from the mountain to his hand, then back to the mountain.
Chapter 36. They put four of the unbroken jars in the burlap sack, in case they might be able to use them. Stanley carried the sack. Zero held the shovel.
I should warn you, Stanley said. I'm not exactly the luckiest guy in the world.
Zero wasn't worried.
When you spend your whole life living in a hole, he said, the only way you can go is up.
They gave each other the thumbs up sign, then headed out. It was the hottest part of the day. Stanley's empty, empty, empty canteen was still strapped around his neck. He thought back to the water truck and wished he'd at least stopped and filled his canteen before running off. They hadn't gone very far before Zero had another attack. He clutched his stomach as he let himself fall to the ground. Stanley could only wait for it to pass. The sploosh had saved Zero's life, but it was now destroying him from the inside. He wondered how long it would be before he, too, felt the effects. He looked at Big Thumb. It didn't seem any closer than when they first started out. Zero took a deep breath and managed to sit up.
Can you walk? Stanley asked him.
Just give me a second, Zero said.
He took another breath, then, using the shovel, pulled himself back to his feet. He gave Stanley the thumbs-up sign, and they continued. Sometimes Stanley would try to go for a long while without looking at Big Thumb. He'd make a mental snapshot of how it looked, then wait maybe 10 minutes before looking at it again, to see if it seemed closer. It never did. It was like chasing the moon. And if they ever reached it, he realized, then they'd still have to climb it.
I wonder who she was, said Zero.
Who?
Mary Lou, said Zero.
Stanley smiled. I guess she was once a real person, on a real lake. It's hard to imagine.
I bet she was pretty, said Zero. Somebody must have loved her a lot, to name a boat after her.
Yeah, said Stanley. I bet she looked great in a bathing suit, sitting in the boat while her boyfriend rowed. Zero used the shovel as a third leg. Two legs weren't enough to keep him up.
I gotta stop and rest, he said after a while.
Stanley looked at Big Thumb. It still didn't look any closer. He was afraid if Zero stopped, he might never get started again. We're almost there, he said. He wondered which was closer, Camp Green Lake or Big Thumb.
I really have to sit down.
Just see if you can go a little. Zero collapsed. The shovel stayed up a fraction of a second longer, perfectly balanced on the tip of the blade. Then it fell next to him. Zero knelt, bent over with his head on the ground. Stanley could hear a very low moaning sound coming from him. He looked at the shovel and couldn't help but think that he might need it to dig a grave. Zero's last hole. And who will dig a grave for me, he thought. But Zero did get up, once again flashing thumbs up.
Give me some words, he said weakly.
It took Stanley a few seconds to realize what he meant. Then he smiled and said, R-U-N. Zero sounded it out to himself.
R-un.
Run. Run. Good. F-U-N.
F-fun.
The spelling seemed to help Zero. It gave him something to concentrate on besides his pain and weakness. It distracted Stanley as well. The next time he looked up at Big Thumb, it really did seem closer. They quit spelling words when it hurt too much to talk. Stanley's throat was dry. He was weak and exhausted. Yet as bad as he felt, he knew that Zero felt 10 times worse. As long as Zero could keep going, he could keep going too. It was possible, he thought, he hoped, that he didn't get any of the bad bacteria. Zero hadn't been able to unscrew the lid. Maybe the bad germs couldn't get in either. Maybe the bacteria were only in the jars which opened easily, the ones he was now carrying in his sack. What scared Stanley the most about dying wasn't his actual death. He figured he could handle the pain. It wouldn't be much worse than what he felt now. In fact, maybe at the moment of his death, he would be too weak to feel pain. Death would be a relief. What worried him the most
was the thought of his parents not knowing what happened to him, not knowing whether he was dead or alive. He hated to imagine what it would be like for his mother and father, day after day, month after month, not knowing, living on false hope. For him, at least, it would be over. For his parents, the pain would never end. He wondered if the warden would send out a search party to look for him. It didn't seem likely. She didn't send anyone to look for Zero. But no one cared about Zero. They simply destroyed his files. But Stanley had a family. She couldn't pretend he was never there. He wondered what she would tell them. And when.
"What do you think's up there?" Zero asked.
Stanley looked to the top of Big Thumb.
"Oh, probably
an Italian restaurant," he said. Zero managed to laugh. "I think I'll get a pepperoni pizza. And a large root beer," said Stanley.
"I want an ice cream sundae," said Zero, "with nuts and whipped cream and bananas and hot fudge."
The sun was almost directly in front of them. The thumb pointed up toward it. They came to the end of the lake. Huge white stone cliffs rose up before them. Unlike the eastern shore, where Camp Green Lake was situated, the western shore did not slope down gradually. It was as if they had been walking across the flat bottom of a giant frying pan, and now they had to somehow climb up out of it. They could no longer see Big Thumb. The cliffs blocked their view. The cliffs also blocked out the sun. Zero groaned and clutched his stomach, but he remained standing.
"I'm all right," he whispered.
Stanley saw a rut, about a foot wide and 6 inches deep, running down a cliff. On either side of the rut were a series of ledges. "Let's try there," he said. It looked to be about a 50-foot climb, straight up. Stanley still managed to hold the sack of jars in his left hand as he slowly moved up, from ledge to ledge, crisscrossing the rut. At times he had to use the side of the rut for support in order to make it to the next ledge. Zero stayed with him, somehow. His frail body trembled terribly as he climbed the stone wall. Some of the ledges were wide enough to sit on. Others stuck out no more than a few inches, just enough for a quick step. Stanley stopped about two-thirds of the way up, on a fairly wide ledge. Zero came up alongside him. "You okay?" Stanley asked. Zero gave the thumbs-up sign. Stanley did the same. He looked above him. He wasn't sure how he'd get to the next ledge. It was 3 or 4 feet above his head, and he didn't see any footholds. He was afraid to look down.
"Give me a boost," said Zero. "Then I'll pull you up with the shovel."
"You won't be able to pull me up," said Stanley.
"Yes, I will," said Zero.
Stanley cupped his hands together, and Zero stepped on his interwoven fingers. He was able to lift Zero high enough for him to grab the protruding slab of rock. Stanley continued to help him from below as Zero pulled himself onto the ledge. While Zero was getting himself situated up there, Stanley attached the sack to the shovel by poking a hole through the burlap. He held it up to Zero. Zero first grabbed hold of the sack, then the shovel. He set the shovel so that half the blade was supported by the rock slab. The wooden shaft hung down towards Stanley.
"Okay," he said.
Stanley doubted this would work. It was one thing for him to lift Zero, who was half his weight. It was quite another for Zero to try to pull him up. Stanley grabbed hold of the shovel as he climbed up the rock wall, using the sides of the rut to help support him. His hands moved one over the other, up the shaft of the shovel. He felt Zero's hand clasp his wrist. He let go of the shaft with one hand and grabbed the top of the ledge. He gathered his strength, and for a brief second seemed to defy gravity as he took a quick step up the wall, and with Zero's help, pulled himself the rest of the way over the ledge. He caught his breath. There was no way he could have done that a few months ago. He noticed a large spot of blood on his wrist. It took him a moment to realize that it was Zero's blood. Zero had deep gashes in both hands. He had held onto the metal blade of the shovel, keeping it in place as Stanley climbed. Zero brought his hands to his mouth and sucked up his blood. One of the glass jars had broken in the sack. They decided to save the pieces. They might need to make a knife or something. They rested briefly, then continued on up. It was a fairly easy climb the rest of the way. When they reached flat ground, Stanley looked up to see the sun, a fiery ball balancing on top of Big Thumb. God was twirling a basketball. Soon, they were walking in the long, thin shadow of the thumb.
Chapter 37.
We're almost there, said Stanley. He could see the base of the mountain. Now that they really were almost there, it scared him. Big Thumb was his only hope. If there was no water, no refuge, then they'd have nothing, not even hope. There was no exact place where the flat land stopped and the mountain began. The ground got steeper and steeper, and then there was no doubt that they were heading up the mountain. Stanley could no longer see Big Thumb. The slope of the mountain was in the way. It became too steep to go straight up. Instead, they zigzagged back and forth, increasing their altitude by small increments every time they changed directions. Patches of weeds dotted the mountainside. They walked from one patch to another, using the weeds as footholds. As they got higher, the weeds got thicker. Many had thorns, and they had to be careful walking through them. Stanley would have liked to stop and rest, but he was afraid they'd never get started again. As long as Zero could keep going, he could keep going too. Besides, he knew they didn't have much daylight left. As the sky darkened, bugs began appearing above the weed patches. A swarm of gnats hovered around them, attracted by their sweat. Neither Stanley nor Zero had the strength to try to swat at them. How are you doing? Stanley asked. Zero pointed thumbs up. Then he said, If a gnat lands on me, it'll knock me over. Stanley gave him some more words. B-U-G-S, he spelled. Zero concentrated hard, then said, Boogs. Stanley laughed. A wide smile spread across Zero's sick and weary face as well. Bugs, he said. Good, said Stanley. Remember, it's a short U if there's no E at the end. Okay, here's a hard one. How about L-U-N-C-H? Suddenly, Zero made a horrible, wrenching noise as he doubled over and grabbed his stomach. His frail body shook violently, and he threw up, emptying his stomach of the sploosh. He leaned on his knees and took several deep breaths. Then he straightened up and continued going. The swarm of gnats stayed behind, preferring the contents of Zero's stomach to the sweat on the boys' faces. Stanley didn't give him any more words, thinking that he needed to save his strength. But about 10 or 15 minutes later, Zero said, Lunch. As they climbed higher, the patches of weeds grew thicker, and they had to be careful not to get their feet tangled in thorny vines. Stanley suddenly realized something. There hadn't been any weeds on the lake. Weeds and bugs, he said. There's got to be water around somewhere. We must be getting close. A wide clown-like smile spread across Zero's face. He flashed the thumbs up sign, then fell. He didn't get up. Stanley bent over him. Come on, Zero, he urged. We're getting close. Come on, Hector. Weeds and bugs, weeds and boogs. Stanley shook him. I've already ordered your hot fudge sundae, he said. They're making it right now. Zero said nothing. Chapter 38. Stanley took hold of Zero's forearms and pulled him upright. Then he stooped down and let Zero fall over his right shoulder. He stood up, lifting Zero's worn-out body off the ground. He left the shovel and sack of jars behind as he continued up the mountain. Zero's legs dangled in front of him. Stanley couldn't see his feet, which made it difficult to walk through the tangled patches of weeds and vines. He concentrated on one step at a time, carefully raising and setting down each foot. He thought only about each step, and not the impossible task that lay before him. Higher and higher he climbed. His strength came from somewhere deep inside himself, and also seemed to come from the outside as well. After focusing on Big Thumb for so long, it was as if the rock had absorbed his energy and now acted like a kind of giant magnet, pulling him toward it. After a while, he became aware of a foul odor. At first he thought it came from Zero, but it seemed to be in the air, hanging heavy all around him. He also noticed that the ground wasn't as steep anymore. As the ground flattened, a huge stone precipice rose up ahead of him, just barely visible in the moonlight. It seemed to grow bigger with each step he took. It no longer resembled a thumb, and he knew he'd never be able to climb it. Around him, the smell became stronger. It was the bitter smell of despair. Even if he could somehow climb Big Thumb, he knew he wouldn't find water. How could there be water at the top of a giant rock? The weeds and bugs survived only by an occasional rainstorm, like the one he had seen from camp. Still, he continued toward it. If nothing else, he wanted to at least reach the thumb. He never made it. His feet slipped out from under him. Zero's head knocked against the back of his shoulder as he fell and tumbled into a small muddy gully. As he lay face down in the muddy ditch, he didn't know if he'd ever get up again. He didn't know if he'd even try. Had he come all this way just to... You need water to make mud. He crawled along the gully in the direction that seemed the muddiest. The ground became gloppier. The mud splashed up as he slapped the ground. Using both hands, he dug a hole in the soggy soil. It was too dark to see, but he thought he could feel a tiny pool of water at the bottom of his hole. He stuck his head in the hole and licked the dirt. He dug deeper, and as he did so, more water seemed to fill the hole. He couldn't see it, but he could feel it, first with his fingers, then with his tongue. He dug until he had a hole that was about as deep as his arm was long. There was enough water for him to scoop out with his hands and drop on Zero's face. Zero's eyes remained closed, but his tongue poked out between his lips, searching out the droplets. Stanley dragged Zero closer to the hole. He dug, then scooped some more water and let it pour out of his hands into Zero's mouth. As he continued to widen his hole, his hand came across a smooth, round object. It was too smooth and too round to be a rock. He wiped the dirt off and realized it was an onion. He bit into it without peeling it. The hot, bitter juice burst into his mouth. He could feel it all the way up to his eyes, and when he swallowed, he felt its warmth move down his throat and into his stomach. He only ate half. He gave the other half to Zero. Here, eat this.
What is it?
Zero whispered.
A hot fudge sundae.
Chapter 39. Stanley awoke in a meadow, looking up at the giant rock tower. It was layered and streaked with different shades of red, burnt orange, brown, and tan. It must have been over 100 feet tall. Stanley lay a while, just looking at it. He didn't have the strength to get up. It felt like the insides of his mouth and throat were coated with sand. And no wonder. When he rolled over, he saw the water hole. It was about 2.5 feet deep and over 3 feet wide. At the bottom lay no more than 2 inches of very brown water. His hands and fingers were sore from digging, especially under his fingernails. He scooped some dirty water into his mouth, then swished it around, trying to filter it with his teeth. Zero moaned. Stanley started to say something to him, but no words came out of his mouth, and he had to try again.
How you doing?
It hurt to talk.
Not good, Zero said quietly.
With great effort, he rolled over, raised himself to his knees, and crawled to the water hole. He lowered his head into it and lapped up some water. Then he jerked back, clutched his knees to his chest, and rolled to his side. His body shook violently. Stanley thought about going back down the mountain to look for the shovel so he could make the water hole deeper. Maybe that would give them cleaner water. They could use the jars as drinking glasses. But he didn't think he had the strength to go down, let alone make it back up again, and he didn't know where to look. He struggled to his feet. He was in a field of greenish-white flowers that seemed to extend all the way around Big Thumb. He took a deep breath, then walked the last 50 yards to the giant precipice and touched it.
Tag, you're it.
Then he walked back to Zero in the waterhole. On the way, he picked one of the flowers. It actually wasn't one big flower, he discovered, but instead, each flower was really a cluster of tiny little flowers that formed a round ball. He brought it to his mouth, but had to spit it out. He could see part of the trail he had made the night before, when he carried Zero up the mountain. If he was going to head back down and look for the shovel, he realized, he should do it soon, while the trail was fresh. But he didn't want to leave Zero. He was afraid Zero might die while he was gone. Zero was still lying doubled over on his side.
I gotta tell you something, he said with a groan.
Don't talk, said Stanley. Save your strength.
No, listen, Zero insisted.
Then he closed his eyes as his face twisted with pain.
I'm listening, Stanley whispered. I took your shoes, Zero said.
Stanley didn't know what he was talking about. His shoes were on his feet.
That's all right, he said. Just rest now. It's all my fault, said Zero.
It's nobody's fault, said Stanley. I didn't know, Zero said. That's okay, Stanley said. Just rest. Zero closed his eyes. But then again he said, I didn't know about the shoes. What shoes? From the shelter? It took a moment for Stanley to comprehend. Clyde Livingston's shoes?
I'm sorry, said Zero.
Stanley stared at him. It was impossible. Zero was delirious. Zero's confession seemed to bring him some relief. The muscles in his face relaxed. As he drifted into sleep, Stanley softly sang him the song that had been in his family for generations.
If only the woodpecker sighs, the bark on the tree was just a little bit softer, while the wolf waits below, hungry and lonely, he cries to the moon. If only...
Chapter 40. When Stanley found the onion the night before, he didn't question how it had come to be there. He ate it gratefully. But now, as he sat gazing at Big Thumb and the meadow full of flowers, he couldn't help but wonder about it. If there was one wild onion, there could be more. He intertwined his fingers and tried to rub out the pain. Then he bent down and dug up another flower, this time pulling up the entire plant, including the root.
Onions! Fresh, hot, sweet onions! Sam called as Mary Lou pulled the cart down Main Street. 8 cents a dozen!
It was a beautiful spring morning. The sky was painted pale blue and pink, the same color as the lake and the peach trees along its shore. Mrs. Gladys Tennyson was wearing just her nightgown and robe as she came running down the street after Sam. Mrs. Tennyson was normally a very proper woman who never went out in public without dressing up in fine clothes and a hat. So it was quite surprising to the people of Green Lake to see her running past them. Sam, she shouted.
Whoa, Mary Lou, said
Sam, stopping his mule and cart.
Good morning, Mrs. Tennyson, he said. How's little Becca doing?
Gladys Tennyson was all smiles. I think she's going to be all right. The fever broke about an hour ago, thanks to you.
I'm sure the good Lord and Doc Hawthorne deserve most of the credit.
The good Lord, yes, agreed Mrs. Tennyson, but not Dr. Hawthorne. That quack wanted to put leeches on her stomach. Leeches? My word. He said they would suck out the bad blood. Now you tell me, how would a leech know good blood from bad blood?
I wouldn't know, said Sam.
It was your onion tonic, said Mrs. Tennyson. That's what saved her. Other townspeople made their way to the cart.
Good morning, Gladys, said Hattie Parker. Don't you look lovely this morning?
Several people snickered. Good morning, Hattie, Mrs. Tennyson replied.
Does your husband know you're parading about in your bedclothes?
Hattie asked. There were more snickers.
My husband knows exactly where I am and how I'm dressed, thank you, said Mrs. Tennyson. We have both been up all night and half the morning with Rebecca. She almost died from stomach sickness. It seems she ate some bad meat.
Hattie's face flushed. Her husband, Jim Parker, was the butcher.
It made my husband and me sick as well, said Mrs. Tennyson. But it nearly killed Becca, what with her being so young. Sam saved her life.
Wasn't me, said Sam. It was the onions.
I'm glad Becca's all right,
Hattie said contritely.
I keep telling Jim he needs to wash his knives, said Mr. Pike, who owned the general store.
Hattie Parker excused herself, then turned and quickly walked away.
Tell Becca when she feels up to it to come by the store for a piece of candy, said Mr. Pike.
Thank you. I'll do that.
Before returning home, Mrs. Tennyson bought a dozen onions from Sam. She gave him a dime and told him to keep the change.
I don't take charity, Sam told her. But if you want to buy a few extra onions for Mary Lou, I'm sure she'd appreciate it.
All right, then, said Mrs. Tennyson. Give me my change in onions.
Sam gave Mrs. Tennyson an additional 3 onions, and she fed them one at a time to Mary Lou. She laughed as the old donkey ate them out of her hand. Stanley and Zero slept off and on for the next 2 days, ate onions, all they wanted, and splashed dirty water into their mouths. In the late afternoon, Big Thumb gave them shade. Stanley tried to make the hole deeper, but he really needed the shovel. His efforts just seemed to stir up the mud and make the water dirtier. Zero was sleeping. He was still very sick and weak,
but the sleep and the onion seemed to be doing him some good. Stanley was no longer afraid that he would die soon. Still, he didn't want to go for the shovel while Zero was asleep. He didn't want him to wake up and think he'd been deserted. He waited for Zero to open his eyes. "I think I'll go look for the shovel," Stanley said.
"I'll wait here," Zero said feebly, as if he had any other choice.
Stanley headed down the mountain. The sleep in the onions had done him a lot of good as well. He felt strong. It was fairly easy to follow the trail he had made 2 days earlier. There were a few places where he wasn't sure he was going the right way, but it just took a little bit of searching before he found the trail again. He went quite a ways down the mountain, but still didn't find the shovel. He looked back up toward the top of the mountain. He must have walked right past it, he thought. There was no way he could have carried Zero all the way up from here. Still, he headed downward just in case. He came to a bare spot between two large patches of weeds and sat down to rest. Now he had definitely gone too far, he decided. He was tired out from walking down the hill. It would have been impossible to have carried Zero up the hill from here, especially after walking all day with no food or water. The shovel must be buried in some weeds. Before starting back up, he took one last look around in all directions. He saw a large indentation in the weeds a little farther down the mountain. It didn't seem likely that the shovel could be there, but he'd already come this far. There, lying in some tall weeds, he found the shovel and the sack of jars. He was amazed. He wondered if the shovel and sack might have rolled down the hill. But none of the jars were broken, except the one which had broken earlier. And if they had rolled down the hill, it is doubtful that he would have found the sack and shovel side by side. On his way back up the mountain, Stanley had to sit down and rest several times. It was a long, hard climb. Chapter 41. Zero's condition continued to improve. Stanley slowly peeled an onion. He liked eating them one layer at a time. The water hole was now almost as large as the holes he had dug back at Camp Green Lake. It contained almost 2 feet of murky water. Stanley had dug it all himself. Zero had offered to help, but Stanley thought it better for Zero to save his strength. It was a lot harder to dig in water than it was in a dry lake. Stanley was surprised that he himself hadn't gotten sick, either from the sploosh, the dirty water, or from living on onions. He used to get sick quite a lot back at home. Both boys were barefoot. They had washed their socks. All their clothes were very dirty, but their socks were definitely the worst. They didn't dip their socks into the hole, afraid to contaminate the water. Instead, they filled the jars and poured the water over their dirty socks.
"I didn't go to the homeless shelter very often," Zero said. "Just if the weather was really bad. I'd have to find someone to pretend to be my mom. If I'd just gone by myself, they would have asked me a bunch of questions. If they'd found out I didn't have a mom, they would have made me a ward of the state."
"What's a ward of the state?" Zero smiled.
"I don't know, but I didn't like the sound of it."
Stanley remembered Mr. Pendansky telling the warden that Zero was a ward of the state. He wondered if Zero knew he'd become one.
"I liked sleeping outside," said Zero. "I used to pretend I was a Cub Scout. I always wanted to be a Cub Scout. I'd see them at the park in their blue uniforms."
"I was never a Cub Scout," said Stanley. "I wasn't good at social stuff like that. Kids made fun of me because I was fat."
"I liked the blue uniforms," said Zero. "Maybe I wouldn't have liked being a Cub Scout."
Stanley shrugged one shoulder.
"My mother was once a Girl Scout," said Zero.
"I thought you said you didn't have a mother."
"Everybody has to have a mother."
"Well, yeah, I know that."
"She said she once won a prize for selling the most Girl Scout cookies," said Zero. "She was real proud of that."
Stanley peeled off another layer of his onion.
"We always took what we needed," Zero said. "When I was little, I didn't even know it was stealing. I don't remember when I found out. But we just took what we needed, never more. So when I saw the shoes on display in the shelter, I just reached in the glass case and took them."
"Clyde Livingston's shoes?" asked Stanley.
"I didn't know they were his. I just thought they were somebody's old shoes. It was better to take someone's old shoes, I thought, than steal a pair of new ones. I didn't know they were famous. There was a sign, but of course I couldn't read it. Then the next thing I know, everybody's making this big deal about how the shoes are missing." It was kind of funny in a way. The whole place is going crazy. There I was, wearing the shoes. And everyone's running around saying, what happened to the shoes? The shoes are gone. I just walked out the door. No one noticed me. When I got outside, I ran around the corner and immediately took off the shoes. I put them on top of a parked car. I remember they smelled really bad.
Yeah, those were them, said Stanley.
Did they fit you?
Pretty much.
Stanley remembered being surprised at Clyde Livingston's small shoe size. Stanley's shoes were bigger. Clyde Livingston had small, quick feet. Stanley's feet were big and slow.
I should have just kept them, said Zero. I'd already made it out of the shelter and everything. I ended up getting arrested the next day when I tried to walk out of a shoe store with a new pair of sneakers. If I had just kept those old, smelly sneakers, then neither of us would be here right now.
Chapter 42. Zero became strong enough to help dig the hole. When he finished, it was over 6 feet deep. He filled the bottom with rocks to help separate the water from the dirt. He was still the best hole digger around.
That's the last hole I will ever dig, he declared, throwing down the shovel.
Stanley smiled. He wished it were true, but he knew they had no choice but to eventually return to Camp Green Lake. They couldn't live on onions forever. They had been completely around Big Thumb. It was like a giant sundial. They followed the shade. They were able to see out in all directions. There was no place to go. The mountain was surrounded by desert. Zero stared at Big Thumb.
It must have a hole in it, he said, filled with water.
You think?
Where else could the water be coming from? Zero asked. Water doesn't run uphill.
Stanley bit into an onion. It didn't burn his eyes or nose, and in fact, he no longer noticed a particularly strong taste. He remembered when he had first carried Zero up the hill, how the air had smelled bitter. It was the smell of thousands of onions, growing and rotting and sprouting. Now he didn't smell a thing. How many onions do you think we've eaten? He asked. Zero shrugged.
I don't even know how long we've been here.
I'd say about a week, said Stanley. And we probably each eat about 20 onions a day, so that's...
280 onions, said Zero.
Stanley smiled. I bet we really stink. 2 nights later, Stanley lay awake staring up at the star-filled sky. He was too happy to fall asleep. He knew he had no reason to be happy. He had heard or read somewhere that right before a person freezes to death, he suddenly feels nice and warm. He wondered if perhaps he was experiencing something like that. It occurred to him that he couldn't remember the last time he felt happiness. It wasn't just being sent to Camp Green Lake that had made his life miserable. Before that, he'd been unhappy at school, where he had no friends, and bullies like Derek Dunn picked on him. No one liked him, and the truth was, he didn't especially like himself. He liked himself now. He wondered if he was delirious. He looked over at Zero sleeping near him. Zero's face was lit in the starlight, and there was a flower petal in front of his nose that moved back and forth as he breathed. It reminded Stanley of something out of a cartoon. Zero breathed in, and the petal was drawn up, almost touching his nose. Zero breathed out, and the petal moved toward his chin. It stayed on Zero's face for an amazingly long time before fluttering off to the side. Stanley considered placing it back in front of Zero's nose, but it wouldn't be the same. It seemed like Zero had lived at Camp Green Lake forever, but as Stanley thought about it now, he realized that Zero must have gotten there no more than a month or two before him. Zero was actually arrested a day later, but Stanley's trial kept getting delayed because of baseball. He remembered what Zero had said a few days before. If Zero had just kept those shoes, then neither of them would be here right now. As Stanley stared at the glittering night sky, he thought there was no place he would rather be. He was glad.